We're doing the letters of Rav Elchanan Wasserman, one page Yud Aleph, and this essay is about Shibush Badeot, mistakes when it comes to Jewish philosophy. Da'at HaRambam, Maimonides writes in the Laws of Tshuva, the third chapter, Da'amamin b'gshama hu min, that if someone believes that Hashem has any physical form, that Hashem is corporal, has a body, then he is a min, he is an apostate. V'aravad, and the Ravid over there disagrees, because the Ravid writes, "Katav shegdolim v'tohim ta'u b'zeh," that some great people, some great rabbis in Jewish history, erred in this. They said that Hashem does have a body. You have different stories in Chazal that illustrate, that describe Hashem as having a body. You read Daniel in the book of Daniel, it says Hashem has a white beard. It says he has white clothing. His hair is levushei kitlag chivar. Daniel describes his clothing is like white snow. V'se'ar reishei, and the hair on his head is ka'amar nekei, like clean wool. Pasuk in Daniel. If you look in the Torah, it describes etzba Elokim, it's a finger of God. It says Hashem ish milchama, Hashem is a man of war. So we have terms in Tanakh and in the Midrashim that describe Hashem as though Hashem has a body. It says Hashem sheds 3 tears every day. Certainly sounds like Hashem has tears, something physical. V'shamati b'shem kvod mori v'rabi agaon Rav Chaim Halevi Zatzal mi'Brisk. I heard in the name of Rav Chaim of Brisk, the da'at HaRambam, when it comes to Maimonides' opinion, ki b'kfira lo shayach shogeg, that when it comes to errors in Jewish philosophy, what we call kifira, the denial of Hashem, there's no room to say I made a mistake. Because there's a basic principle. To be one of Am Yisrael, a person has to have emunah. And emunah means you got it right. And if you don't got it right, then you don't have the basics. We're not talking about the same God. They say in his name like this, Dovis is Nebich in Apikoris. Poor guy, he's an apikoris. He's an apostate. He's oich an apikoris. Even someone who's a pitiful apikoris, even though he's a pitiful apostate, he's nonetheless an apostate. V'lechora, I'm lucky, I don't know that many Yiddish, but I covered all my Yiddish in that sentence, I think. V'lechora, dvarav muchachim, sharei kol hakofrim kol avdei avodah zarah mutin. He says, anyone that's an apostate, anyone that's a pagan, that's serving avodah zarah, they're all making a basic error. And if you're going to let him get away with it, if you're going to say, well, he made a mistake, so then anyone can say that. Who made the biggest mistake? The guy who sacrifices his son to the pagan god Molech. So for sure he made a mistake. He didn't do it on purpose. And yet the Torah says he gets the death penalty for that. The Torah doesn't say, poor guy, you made a mistake. So he lost his son, he sacrificed his son, and now he's going to pay for it with his life. We don't say he made a mistake. אבל קשה דעת תינוק המוטל בריסה גם כן אין אמונה ומקום קום ובכלל ישראל. רב אלחנן וסרמן asks, how can you say that emuna is something, is a basic elementary component to being a part of Klal Yisrael? When you have a baby, they don't have emuna, they don't know anything. They're a part of Klal Yisrael, there's nothing wrong. ותינוק שנשבע לבן עכו מביא קורבן אשר גתו ואין תינוק אם הוא מארם. When you have a Jew who grew up knowing nothing, you don't say he's an apostate. You say, poor guy, he didn't know anything, and he's a kosher Jew, okay? He comes back, now he's learned. ומוכח תנוס רחמן הפטר גם בחוסרון אמונה. So you do see that with a lack of emuna, if one is anus, if one did the best he could, but it was beyond his capacity, then Hashem doesn't hold him accountable. That's the term anus רחמן הפטר. Yes.
Knowingly and fully
right, but there's a difference between an apostate, a min, a kofer, and someone who's a tinok shenishba. I didn't know any better. What can you do? I didn't know.
What's the implications of being?
That's a good question, but not for now. Yes.
So if you grow up in a religious household, and when you're 17, 18, 19, you decide to become non-religious, are you prepared?
That's a good question. It's a good question. It's a tough call. It's a very, very tough question.
You have the education, but right? You've never internalized it on an individual level. You've just been doing what your parents tell you. Why are you here? Just because you've been educated in it?
I think that the question whether someone who grew up in a religious home will automatically be called a kofer, or whether they can also be called a tinok shenishba, is a difficult question. One of the guys in class brought me an article a few weeks ago about Caspar Weinberger. Caspar Weinberger is the one who ensured that Pollard would stay in prison. Later on, Caspar Weinberger was found guilty for lying to the court and perjury, and President Bush pardoned him, and so he never got to trial. Caspar Weinberger really hated Pollard and hated any affinity for the Jewish people, to put it mildly. Caspar Weinberger's grandfather was Jewish, and his grandfather, I don't think it's even his great-grandfather, I think it's his grandfather, who was in a synagogue where there was a fight, and somehow he ended up out. The rest is history. The family adopted Catholicism, and Caspar Weinberger doesn't take any pride in his Jewish roots. Now, what would you say? That grandfather, who grew up knowing what Judaism was all about, and then made a decision because something rubbed him the wrong way. He was hurt by something. Can you say he's a tinok shenishba? I don't think you can say that. The question is, where do you draw the line? I think that in these areas, wherever possible, I rather leave it to God. Because who are we to judge? One person grew up in an Orthodox system. Take the kids. We discussed that last week, that there are kids who grew up in day schools where all they teach them is that Judaism is v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. And they teach them a very stupid version of Judaism. They regurgitate the same information year after year. And in 10th grade, the guy's learning the same Judaism he learned in 2nd grade. And it's no wonder that he turns away and says, that's stupid, that's not for me. Or that's so open, I can do anything I want. Can you hold that person accountable? It's a tough question. We usually say that person is not held accountable. You see that ger shenit gayer leben anochrim. What's a ger shenit gayer leben anochrim? That's a person who came to a Jewish town, learned enough to convert to Judaism, then went back to his hometown and never got a Jewish education. And he's not held accountable. That's called an onos. So you see that there is an element of education a person can have, and he'll still be called an onus. You don't automatically say, just because a person was exposed to Judaism, that he's held accountable. Where you draw the line is a tough call.
And also someone who
Is
not they do the practice, all the practices, all the, what's called, they don't believe in their head.
So the question was asked, if someone performs all the mitzvot, but they don't believe in Hashem or Torah being from heaven. So I can give you an informative answer or an educational answer. And I'm going to opt for the educational one. And if you want the informative one, you'll have to re-ask the question on Thursday night. The educational answer is what we learned in the Chazon Ish. That the Chazon Ish says that usually it's not an all or nothing. Even the person who's performing mitzvot but doesn't believe in his creator, does he really not believe at all, or does he only believe like 10%, or does he believe like 20%, or is there, he's back and forth, because why is he doing all the mitzvot if he really doesn't believe? So that's the educational answer. And if you want the informative answer, so remind me on Thursday night, we'll discuss Big Rosh Moshe's response about honoring someone like that to give a blessing under the chuppah. But that's not relevant to us right now. Back to Rav Elchanan Wasserman. V'yesh lever lefi ha-mevu'ar lemala ki yisodei ha-emunah mukhachin v'dat adam mitzad atzmah lo titen makom la-kfirah. So we're going to come back to the fundamental point he's been driving home in the previous two essays as well, that the fundamentals of emunah are things that are self-evident. And if a person only thinks about it, then he should come to realization. There is a creator and he wants something from me. There's no room for denial. It's only man's will that causes him to remove the yoke of heaven and causes him to be biased or partial and err in things that should be obvious. And that's why we don't view it as a mistake. It's a willful mistake. אבל אומר מותר לעבוד עבודה זרה ושוגג ופטור ממיתה כיוון שסבור שהוא עושה ברשות התורה. But if someone were to actually come in here and say, I thought the Torah permits me to do this. I thought it's permissible according to Torah to serve this God or this angel. So then in essence, you're right. That would be shogeg. He would not get punished. If that's what he thought the Torah said, because he wasn't denying the fundamentals of Torah. ואפשר שזוהי כוונת הראב"ד. And maybe that's what the rivalry intended when he wrote מפני הגדות המשבשות הדעות. Forgive me, we just so much. Never mind, I'll get it later. The ראב"ד wrote, okay, תודה רבה. Thank you. Because of the הגדות, the stories in Talmud that cause a person to err, היינו שתאותן אינה מדעת עצמן. It's not out of their own perception that they erred, אלא מפני שמבטלים דעתן לדעת הגדות, but rather they say, hey, the Talmud says Hashem sheds three tears every day. So of course I understand God has a body. It's part of their acceptance of Torah. They misunderstood the Torah. That's what the Ravad is coming to say. He's coming to say, don't think that the early rabbis who thought Hashem had a body, they were missing something in the basics of Judaism. They just misunderstood certain lines in Talmud. And the Ravad was coming to say something positive about them, that this is like someone who says, I think the Torah permitted this. This concept that he's saying here is also elaborated upon by Rav Yosef Elbo, who wrote the work Sefer HaIkarim. In the very beginning of his work, he says, what would we say about the rabbis who disagreed with the Rambam? If they honestly thought that the Torah actually gives us different principles than the Rambam thought, would you call them an apostate? Would the Rambam call them an apostate? Just because they don't agree to his 13 principles? So the Sefer HaIkarim, after a long to and fro, comes to the conclusion that if within the learning of the words of Chazal, one of the commentaries came to a conclusion that this is what our sages taught us, that this is what we're supposed to believe, you can't argue with it. The Talmud in Sanhedrin says Rabbi Hillel holds that Mashiach came, he's not coming anymore. So now is Rabbi Hillel an apostate? According to the Rambam, one of the principles of Jewish faith is that Mashiach is still to come. Now, does that mean, according to the Rambam, Rabbi Hillel is an apostate? That's one of the questions that the Sefer HaIkarim asks. So based on that, he comes back and he says, you have to say that anything that any one of the rabbis that expressed an opinion, and their opinion stems from the text, stems from their understanding of the Torah, even if they were in error, you can't call that an apostate. We had an interesting question. We had a student here once who said, I want to convert to Judaism and not accept Maimonides' 13 principles. I want to go to Sefer HaIkarim, who says there are only three. Now will the courts accept me? Right. So the Chasam Sofer addresses that question already. Basically, Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, accepted Maimonides' principles. Does that mean the Jewish people look at Rav Yosef Elbo and say that he's an apostate? God forbid. No, Rav Yosef Elbo, he had his understanding, like he writes in the beginning of his book. V'tit Yashiv. Anyways, Rav Yosef Elbo doesn't really disagree with the Rambam. His disagreement is about how you define the term Ikar. It's not a disagreement about what the truth is, it's a disagreement about how you define the tenets of Jewish faith. What defines an Ikar? V'tit Yashiv Zemash Makshim Mehada Amar Rabbi Hillel. Here, he quotes the question, Sefer HaIkarim quotes. People ask, what about Rabbi Hillel said in Mashiach Yisrael Shkvar Achlu Bimei Chizkiyah? Rabbi Hillel says, in the days of Chizkiyah, the king of Israel, was the Messiah. There's no more Messiah coming. How could you say Rabbi Hillel is an apostate just because he says there's no more Mashiach. And based on what we explained, it works out fine. Rabbi Hillel amar ken b'bnei shtab b'avanat ha'ktuvin v'avi ke'omer mutar v'dino k'shogeg, the way we explained until now. U'mishum hachi kama Rav Yosef hatam shar le'mar le'Rabbi Hillel. That's what Rav Yosef over there says, God should forgive Rabbi Hillel because he made a mistake. V'dat ha'rambam ki ha'taut b'inyan ha'gshama ba midat ha'tzman v'lo mibnei ha'gadot. The reason Maimonides went out against the rabbis who said that Hashem is corporeal, that Hashem has a body, was because the Rambam thought they came up with this of their own. If they thought of this and they came up with that, the Rambam says, that I can't accept. If they got it like the Ravad says, they got it from the text, that's how they understood the Gemara, so that's forgivable. Kilo hayta datan tzlula lo haya agadot matot otan, v'hayu motzin derech liyashev divrei agadot shluyu neged hadat, because the Rambam says, if they really would have thought it through correctly, they wouldn't have made that mistake in understanding our sages. If they made that mistake, it's because, to begin with, they made mistakes in their perception of Judaism. And so the Rambam held them personally accountable, and the Ravad said, no, they're not held personally accountable, it's just their misunderstanding of Talmud. And a misunderstanding of a Medrash or a Talmud is not something that will cause one to be an apostate. That's the first thought. We have one more paragraph. Should we make a run for it, finish the thought? Okay. Finally, uvaze yesh makom leve'er ha'deparach b'gemara atu yira milta zuta tahi. The Talmud quotes, Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, what does Hashem want from you? We turn the page, we're on page Yud Beis, the third line. What does Hashem want for you? Just to be God-fearing people. So the Talmud asks, is that a small thing? Why does Moshe mean, what does Hashem want from you? That's a huge thing, to be a God-fearing person. And the Gemara answers, umishane, in, yes, it is an easy thing. Why? Legabei Moshe, milta zuta tahi. For Moshe Rabbeinu, it was really a simple thing, a small thing. The question is, what's the Gemara's answer? Moshe's talking to the Jewish people. He's not talking to Moshe. He's not talking to himself. So even if this was something minor for Moshe, but he's talking to the people, for the Jewish people, it's not something minor. It's very hard to be a God-fearing person. The Yesh Dever Lefiyam Vuhar, so we can answer based on what we've just explained. The Yisodei Emunah Muchachin. The fundamentals of Jewish faith are concepts which are self-explanatory. A person should find them self-evident. Ela Shurtzonotav Shel Adam Lefkarot Lefkerut Matin Sichlo. But our desires, we want freedom. We want freedom to the point of no responsibility. That's why a person gets confused. So in essence, attaining emunah is very easy. But on the other hand, it's very hard. It's very hard because we're very partial. Our desire constantly affects us. I don't know if we can do a single thing in our day without being affected by our desire. So that's why the Gemara asks, in actuality, it is difficult to attain Yira, to be a God-fearing person. So then Moshe can't say, what does God want from you? What does they mean, what does God want from you? Even the Talmud answers, we see by Moshe, it was so easy to be a God-fearing person because he controlled his desires. So that teaches us that the essence of being a God-fearing person is not hard. If not for our desires, the thing itself is not hard. Is it difficult to fear the one who controls our life? That's why it makes sense to say, what's the big deal? Because in essence, in its own right, it's not difficult to attain. The difficulty is only because we have other desires. I like to tell the story when I ran a day camp, and I was driving the kids back from the park one day, and I see flashing lights behind me, and the police pull me over. And I try to figure out, what am I doing? Well, the kids are seatbelted. I'm seatbelted. I was driving under the speed limit. What could it be? And the policeman comes out and starts talking to me, and then he says to me, look, I see you're not drunk. I say, right? He says, so why were you driving that way? I said, what did I do? He said, your car kept shifting within its lane. I said, okay, I didn't go out of my lane. What did I do? He says, you didn't keep driving straight for a second. I said, I don't know, I held the steering wheel straight. He goes and looks at my tires. He says, your tires are bald. Even though you held your steering wheel straight, there was no way you could stay straight with these tires. I'm giving you a ticket for $200. If you change these tires, then you can come to the judge and say, I said he should waive the ticket. You have to bring him a receipt that you changed the tires. And then I'll tell him to waive the ticket. Okay, he gives me the ticket. I take the kids home. I had a week or two left to the day camp. I finished the day camp. I sold the car. Okay, so it was a car that I bought, I think, for $300. It was an old car. I sold it for about $400. So I made good money on it, right? A junkyard bought it for the engine. So I figured I'll come to court and I'll tell the judge, look, I had this lemon car. I didn't realize the tires were bald. Here you see I sold it to a junkyard for $400. It's not my fault. I didn't know the tires were bald. You know, do away with the ticket. So the day comes for court. Now I know that the worst case scenario is I'm out $200, right? Mm-hmm. Not the end of the world. I got nothing to lose. And I'm waiting in line. And I see the judge is so nice. The guy before me has a ticket for speeding. The judge tells him, why'd you speed? So he says, my girlfriend called me. I was under pressure. And the judge tells him, look, buddy, I can't take off any points for an argument. My girlfriend called me. You got to think of a better argument than that. And if I could write a better argument, I could take off some points. But for that, I can't take off a thing. So he's such a nice judge. He's telling the guy, make a better argument. And I was shaking in my pants. My knees were shaking. And I have to stand before the judge. And it comes my turn to talk. And I start stuttering. And I said to myself, I couldn't believe myself. I was so embarrassed. I said, for $200, you're so nervous talking in front of this judge. What could he do to you? Take $200 and comes Yom Kippur. Do your knees shake? Do you have trouble talking? Do you stutter? It was probably the most embarrassing moment in my life because as I'm standing in front of the judge, I'm thinking Yom Kippur and I'm telling myself, you're more scared of him than you are of Yom Kippur. What a chutzpah. But I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it. I'm standing there shaking, and what's going to happen? Nothing. Nothing. I mean, the end of the story was the judge was very nice, and when I showed him that I sold the car, so he said, okay, just pay a processing fee in Gemarno. I got away with I didn't pay the full ticket. But
how much did you pay?
It was a lot.
Now, how much?
I don't remember. It was like $85. It was a lot.
So
yeah.
You have still $50 right. Profit.
No, he looked at it and he said, you sold this for $400? You sold the car for $400? What'd you buy it for? So I said, $300. So he said, so you made a profit? I said, not if you keep up the ticket. So he was nice, yeah. At any rate, I'm just saying, so coming back to here, that's what Rav Chanan Wasserman writes. It's such a simple thing to have Yiras Shamayim. If we'd really connect to the idea, if we'd really think about it, that we're standing before the one who controls life and death, then it's very simple to have Yiras Shamayim, to be fearful, to have awe of heaven. The problem is we have trouble connecting to it. When we have to deal with a judge who's going to decide over a measly $200, there we get nervous. And when we stand Shmona Esrei, we have a hard time focusing. Our mind is elsewhere. We forget to shut our cell phones. We're all over the place. Rav Chanan Wasserman says, in truth, Yiras Shamayim is a simple thing. That's what Moshe is telling the Jewish people. It's all a question of, can you get rid of all that schmutz? Can you get rid of all that partiality? The fact that we're so drawn, attracted, focused on the material things that take center stage, that take center focus, and then they blot out the importance of Yirat Shamayim. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu speaks about it as though it's nothing. So what we learned today, he began with the Rambam, that says that if people believe that Hashem has a physical body, they're an apostate. Mm-hmm. The Ravad says, well, there were big rabbis before the Rambam who held that way. They misunderstood certain lines in the Medrash. The Rav Chanan Wasserman asked, so what's the answer with that? Rav Chanan Wasserman said, you know, making a mistake is not a good excuse for being an apostate. And Rav Chanan Wasserman said, there's a difference. If one made a mistake in understanding the Torah, there that's forgivable, as we quoted from Sefer HaIkarim, and that's where Rabbi Hillel could be of the opinion that Mashiach has come already. But that's what Ra'avad was coming to defend those rabbis. He was saying they didn't come up with it on their own. One's own philosophy should lead one to the correct understanding that there's a creator who's omnipotent and not corporeal. But if one understands that that's what the Talmud says, so if they accepted it, there's nothing wrong with that, or there's very little wrong with that. And then he said, here we can also understand why Moshe Rabbeinu speaks about it as being so simple to be a God-fearing person, because in essence, it is simple to understand that there is a creator and he has demands of us. It's only our partiality that gets in the way. But in essence, it's a simple thing. If one would only clear his partiality, he would see it very clearly. And that's why Moshe, who had overcome his desires, could say, what's the big deal? All you got to do is be a God-fearing person.
And also,